Chapter 10. Ron's 8 a.m. class was in the auditorium, where he couldn't hear half of what the professor said. His legs stiffened and fell asleep. He still hadn't figured out how you were supposed to take notes without a desk, a blackboard, or someone who made sense to you. He drove George Olds down the parkway for what he hoped would be the last time. He'd found another note on the table this morning that said Jerry and his wife would be over to play cards that night, and they were bringing the car with him. Ron was enjoying the Olds. He goosed the engine, and the car shot over to the left lane with a strong power surge. The radio was playing Hitchin' a Ride, and Ron increased his speed until the needle began to descend and on the speedometer arc. He saw that he'd gotten up to 85 miles an hour and panicked. He looked into the rearview mirror to see if he was screwed and realized that he'd been so busy searching for cops that he hadn't slowed down. He took his foot off the accelerator and the car began to cruise. He moved back to the center lane where he would be less conspicuous. Walking through the parking lot, he realized that he hadn't brought his history notebook for the second class in a row. "Fuck," he said, pushed through the doors of the building, gave his cock a reassuring tug, and went into the auditorium. The history class was depressing because it was dark, and he never made out a familiar face. The teacher was a balding, bearded man who wore a suit and laughed at his own jokes and anecdotes. Ron liked to sit low in his seat, so it was easy for him to not even see the instructor. He slipped in and out, found his place, but discovered that he'd also forgotten to bring a pen. He groaned, stared down at his math notebook, and wished he'd never come to college and its bullshit courses and asshole teachers. The subject for that particular Western Civilization to 1600 class was Professor Paul Lanza's first real lecture on Paleolithic man. It was, by structure, a short wrap-up of information stretching from the dawn of man on down to the magical years of numbering, which Lanza assured his class he would refer to as often as he had the First Amendment. Lanza stroked his beard and said several things Ron couldn't hear. Ron squirmed uncomfortably, trying to decide if he should ask somebody for a pen or just get up and leave. He looked around to see if there was a girl he'd like to ask to coffee after the class. There was nobody. He glared at Lanza, gnawed the inside of his forefinger, and said, "Fuck it. I can't read what he's saying anyway." Professor Lanza didn't see Ron leave, but he did hear the back door close with a jarring thud that toppled him from his line about prehistoria, as he fondly called it. He stammered, and the freshman class smirked. Ron slumped over his coffee with the cheerfulness of a stranded astronaut. The feeling of not being where he belonged enveloped him like the smell of rotten eggs. His face reacted likewise. He bit into a glazed donut like it was his future. He tore it off in chunks that he sloshed down with coffee. In his English notebook was the final draft of Darker Shade of White. The title stared back at him. He admired it. He sure did like that title. As he reread his account of the encounter with Frybush, he looked around to see if there was anybody from that group present. He located their table at the back of the room and looked over at it periodically as he reread the article. There were several words that he guessed the spelling of, but he figured, fuck it. If they didn't print it on account of the spelling, they would be the ones making the error. He hadn't embellished the story this time. He'd spelled out what happened and what he thought was wrong about it. His coffee developed a sickly white film on its surface. He swallowed it down with eyes closed. The newspaper office was cluttered. At the moment, it was an empty floor in the center with conference benches and typewriter tables lining the walls. Ron stared down at a large head of stringy blonde hair, the owner of the hair hunched over a pad and not looking up. He silently checked the article with the feel of the room and decided that would be all right. He cleared his throat, but the pile of greasy straw didn't react. Ron took a few steps into the room. There was still no reaction. "Are you on the paper?" he said in a little voice that he wasn't even sure he'd gotten out of him. There was still no movement. He could see that it was a large guy and that he was working on a drawing. His skin was splotchy to the point that he looked allergic to everything. Ron thought to himself that he wouldn't look as bad as this kid if he'd been dragged along a dirt road. He didn't know what to do, and he didn't want to leave, so he lit a cigarette, put his books on one of the typewriters, and kept staring at the growth. The bottoms of his jeans were ragged and torn up the legs. He wasn't wearing any shoes. Then the door to the room opened, and an indistinct brunette walked past Ron, squealing, "Richard, how are you?" Gradually, Richard rose. "V, oh, far out. Got any acid?" V, who now seemed fully aware of Ron, rested her hands on Richard's shoulders. "Hello," she said, in her best formal voice she could muster. Ron moved quickly toward her, with the article in his hands. "I wrote this for the newspaper. Do you know where I can leave it?" V cracked her chewing gum and pointed to the wooden box that had "New Submissions" written on it. "Right here," she said. Ron moved to the box and gently put his article into it. He picked up his books and headed for the door. "Are you new around here?" Ron looked down at Richard and smiled. He looked back up to V and broadened his smile so she could see his dimples. "Yeah," he said. Then he was out the door. "Vivi," said Richard. "Was that somebody? I'm tripping my brains out." "Far out, Richard," she said, picked up her books, and headed back out the door. Ron breezed out a set of double glass doors that led to the quad. Several blankets had been laid out by sunbathers, and a football was being tossed around. Ron stopped and watched the flight of the ball. He grinned when he saw the slap against the bare chest of a stocky kid who threw a tight spiral to his friend. His mouth fell open as he panned the blankets. Some of the girls were wearing skirts that were so short they didn't even bother trying to cover their panties. There were cutoffs and halter tops, tight jeans, and long, loose hair. He stood against a wall and brought his knee up so that he could rest his books on it. The other hand deftly snagged his cigarettes and matches. He comfortably saw that there were other people in the same position doing the same thing. He was almost relaxed and blew his smoke out easily. He didn't fully notice V, who hadn't noticed him at all as she walked by. She was upset. A stranger at the school was not her idea of someone who was cool to talk about acid around. She dismissed the worry with the thought that she'd ask Chris to tell Richard to be more careful. Ron felt like he was part of a panorama. He counted the nipples and delightfully wiggling behinds, and then he thought it must be time for his class. In the hallway, he saw a clock that told him he was late. He said, "Shit," walks quickly. He mechanically copied down all the numbers the math teacher put on the board without the slightest shred of understanding. He then aimlessly connected circles and squares and wondered if he was ever going to get a date with one of the girls who seemed to be everywhere. The time he'd spent at IBM left him feeling sexually deprived and turned him into a desperate man. Maybe he couldn't get a date for tonight, but what about tomorrow? If Jerry was coming over with his car tonight, why couldn't he get a date? Ron drew a dollar sign in his notebook. That answered his question. The check for his first student loan hadn't come through yet, and tuition had been taking everything that he'd put aside while he was working. He did have about $2, but that wasn't the point. The point was finding somebody to go out with. Ron raised his head to the blackboard to write down some more numbers, and then turned around to a full-faced, picturesque smile that was sitting in back of him. She was as smooth as cultured pearls. The pearls smiled again, and Ron tried to smile back at them, but he wasn't sure if he smiled or just stared. He turned back to his notebook and felt a tension in back of him. She was right there, and she was fucking beautiful. Okay, he thought, this is my shot. We're going to be leaving together. It would be okay if he found the right way to make connection, and the connections didn't already have something plugged into them. Ron wrote more numbers and thought about a good excuse to turn around again. He didn't want to look like an obvious jerk-off. He could drop something. He sneered at his own thought. That was the way he and his friends looked up girls' skirts in the 7th grade. He flashed back on Susan Lucarelli, the chunky, dark-haired girl with her uniform hiked up for everybody to see whatever they wanted. He remembered telling his friend Paul to get a look at her. Paul began dropping his pencil as much as Ron. Later in the week, Paul and Susan had told everybody that they liked each other. Ron felt screwed. Okay, so he couldn't drop anything. What about asking her what was going on with the class? It was an honest question, and probably good for later on, after he'd started talking to her. But it didn't help him right now. Ron wrote down another set of numbers and tried to look up at Professor North like he was listening. He actually did understand about a third of what the old geezer was saying. Maybe if he paid attention, he would understand it all before long. Ron shifted in his chair and turned so that he was facing the aisle. He looked down at the floor again and then at her desk and then at her face. She smiled again. Ron judged the second smile to have been smaller than the first and wondered if he fucked up. The exit was the important move now. There were at least 10 minutes left in the class. He wanted to groan. He wondered if he should ask her to get some coffee. His attention turned to Professor North, who was saying that it was rather warm today and that they were at a time of the year when summer weather was at a premium, and so he was letting the class go early. Ron decided that the old guy was okay. Everybody started to stand up, and now Ron felt that it was almost happening too soon. He turned around as he stood up. She was still seated, arranging her books and pens. Ron watched as she opened different compartments of her handbag to put things away. He'd stood up too soon, and now there was nothing for him to do except leave the room. When he got out into the hall, he turned to look back into the room. She was making her way down the aisle. Okay, he told himself. All I've got to do is stall for a few seconds. He found a beautifully convenient bulletin board covered with sheets of computer printout paper. He stared at them, thinking about how the perforations made it resemble toilet paper. He gave the pearls a big smile when she walked past him, but she didn't seem to notice. He watched her tight jeans and the sway of her superb ass as it wiggled down the hall. Out of my league, he told himself. This is a real piece of ass. Fuck it, a voice said inside of him. He quickened his pace and was up alongside her in a few seconds. That was pretty really nice of him to let us out early like that, he commented. She smiled the way He'd seen her smile the first time. I think he's a nice man. She turned through the doors and out into the parking lot. Ron stayed with her, not knowing where his car was or in what direction they were heading. "Would you like to get something to drink?" he said awkwardly. A polite smile answered him. "No, I don't think that I can. I really have to be getting home right away." As she turned him down, they arrived at the apron of the parking lot. "See you next week," she said, and started for her car. Ron heard the voice inside of him say, "Stop worrying," and he called after her to wait a second. "What I really wanted to ask while you were having coffee with me was whether or not you'd like to go to the GIA Rush party with me on Saturday night." She looked at him without saying anything, almost like she silently stuttered. "I know," he said, figuring that he'd better go on. "This is a bit sudden, but I've been trying to figure out how to get to know you better, and I waited for you after the last class, but I couldn't find you. I mean, well, tell the truth is that I think you're very pretty and would be great if you went to this party with me." This was, of course, a lie. Ron decided that he'd said enough. She had to admit to herself that she didn't have a thing to do on Saturday and that she'd been complaining to her friend Joyce that very morning about how not one of the boys at the school had done anything except stare at her. She told Joyce that she was sure there was something wrong with her. She'd seen the signs for the beer blast, but this didn't seem quite right. She was on her way home, and this guy, who never even said hello to her, was asking her out. "I don't know," she said. It was a small opening, and Ron was going to try to scoot in before it closed. "What's your name?" he said, grinning. Everyone told him that he had a beautiful smile, so he might as well put it to use. "Veronica." "My name is Ron," he offered. "Hey, you know, this does sound weird, but I think we could have fun together." "Why not?" Veronica heard herself ask. She clunked her books on top of her car, a 64 Ford that Ron told her looked to be in good shape, and tore out a piece of paper, gave him the necessary information. He stared at her breasts as she wrote. "I'll be seeing you on Saturday night then," he said. "At about 7:30? "Why don't you give me a call around 5 when I get home from work," she said. "Okay," said Ron with a smile. He backed away and gave her a silly little wave. Veronica looked down at her books and then back up as she got into her car. Ron's pulse beat like the drum solo from Pipeline. He maneuvered his way to his car, feeling like Superman. Veronica's ass was outstanding, and her jeans were super tight. She must have known how it wiggled and done it on purpose. Ron wondered if he'd get laid. He ran his hand over the sheet of directions that she'd put next to him on the seat of his car. The phrase "treasure hunt" went off in his head like a sign. He saw himself running down aisles stacked with footlockers with girls' faces pictured on them. Jan Murray urged him on, and the audience clapped wildly. He stopped in front of a locker with Veronica's face. The pearls shone with smooth luminosity. He pushed the button on her locker, and the face was replaced by a picture of her tight-jeaned ass. Ron cheered with Jan and the audience. He switched on the radio in the middle of a commercial for Raceway Park that featured the sounds of Big Daddy Don Gartlett and his funny cars. Ron was happy. When the Four Tops began to sing about Bernadette, he sang along with them and thought about how good it was to get his hands on Veronica's behind. The ride home took 20 minutes. That was a fair amount of traffic that made zigzagging fun. He floored the gas pedal when he heard "Paint It Black." Then he saw a trooper's unit and slowed up. He felt like he was always surrounded by cops. The police station in his town was located on the corner, and patrol cars went past night and day. The fucking town judge lived across the street with his screwy stepdaughter. Ron vaguely remembered a story about how she used to put on a show with frozen hot dogs for some of the guys on the football team. There was supposed to be a whole lot more to the story, but he hadn't been part of the group, and the girl had only barely ever said hello to him. He swung George's car into the driveway, trying to come close enough to the tree that marked its far corner to break off a twig that jutted out from its trunk. Aunt Dottie was sitting on the steps that led up to her apartment, with Chipper beside her. "How are you doing, Ronald?" she said, fishing into her pocket and coming up with a $20 bill. "Go on down to the corner and get me 4 packs of Chesterfields, okay?" "Sure," said Ron, taking the bill and heading back out the door. She watched him leave and put her arms around Chipper. "I guess I'd better let him have the change, don't you think, Chip? He's probably broke. 20 years old he is and still in school. Been married 2 years and lost a child by the time I was his age. He is a handsome boy, though, isn't he, Chip? Just like my brother before he went into the Navy. Thank God, this one is smart enough not to want to go." She hugged the dog's neck. "Well, I don't think I'll get to puff that many more packs of Chesterfields." She paused and the dog whined. "Do you want to go out, Chipper?" Chipper barked and wagged her tail. She made her way into the backyard. When Ron returned, she told him to keep the change. Ron was confused by a mocking voice from inside him that laughed at him, saying that he was too old for this sort of stuff. He settled for a hollow. "I'll get this back to you sometime, Aunt Dot." She gave him a stern look. "I should live so long." "You'll be around," he said, with a look of reassurance that made her want to spit at him. She turned her back and walked to the other side of the yard, wondering why nobody, except for her, was willing to see that she was obviously dying. They were having LaRusse's sausage mixed with potatoes, onions, and oil for dinner. Marjorie had met the owner of the market when they'd been on vacation a few years ago, and now they bought their meats exclusively from the market. George loved to go back to the old neighborhood and shop whenever he could, and Ron loved to sop the Italian bread in the stuff, so it was usually a happy meal. Ron told the story of how he'd gotten his date and added that Jerry's car had come along just in time. Marjorie laughed to Dottie that he was already making plans for a car he hadn't gotten. "What do you expect from a young man?" snapped Dottie. "At least he's got some life in him. This house would seem like a graveyard if somebody didn't bring some life into it." "What's that remark supposed to mean?" Marjorie bit. Then George said, "How are you going to drive a car and make sure it's registered and has plates and insurance?" Ron froze with a mouth full of sausage. He started to say the word fuck and caught himself. He hadn't thought about any of that or what it would cost. He swallowed, forgetting to chew the food anymore. A glob of sausage fat caught in his throat and made him start to cough. A few seconds later, he realized he was choking. It wasn't fat at all. It was a sausage string, and it was caught halfway down his throat. Red-faced, he reached into his mouth and tried to pull out the string. He gagged and had to run to the bathroom, where he vomited his dinner into the bowl. "Jesus Christ," said Marjorie. "What did you tell him that for?" "What did I say?" screamed George, waving a fork full of salad. "I'm taking my plate upstairs," said Dottie, who was a bit ashamed of Ron and saw the meal wasn't taking a good turn. Ron came out of the bathroom with beads of sweat on his red face. "Why do they put string in the meat?" he growled intensely. George looked down with a secret smile at the 2 pieces of string carefully laid out on the fringes of his plate and didn't say anything. "Sit down and have your coffee," said Marjorie. She replaced the mug and filled it for him and then picked up her dish and scraped it into the garbage. "What's the matter?" said George. "I'm not hungry anymore," she answered. George stabbed his last piece of sausage pointedly. The fork pierced the skin with a little pop, then emphasized the fact that it was good Italian sausage and that he liked the Russa's market. Ron knew that George would never let him have the car to take Veronica to a party, but was struck with an idea. "Won't the car have plates on it?" "Probably not," said George. "Well, then, how are they going to get the car over here?" "I don't know," said George. "Maybe he left the plates on and just turned in the registration. The car still won't be insured." Ron thought this seemed like the best time. "Well, can I borrow your car on Saturday night, then?" "Your mother and I are supposed to go out," said George. He looked at his mother, who nodded in an affirmative. He looked up and headed for the phone. He dialed Hank's number with a hand that wanted to punch something. The line was busy. He slammed the phone down, headed for his room. "You are really something," hollered Marjorie. Juan walked back into the kitchen holding his shoes. "What do you mean? Here we are trying to help you get a car. Is it our fault that your car blew up? Is it our fault that we work all week and want a little friggin' enjoyment on Saturday night? Did I say it was? But the way you act is shitty. Nothing can go wrong in your life without you blowing up. Grow up, for God's sake." Ron's face was a tense mask of muscle when he got to the sidewalk. There was a booth on the corner. He dialed Hank's number again. The line was still busy. "Fuck it," he said, went to the avenue and stuck out his thumb. Nobody stopped for the 10 minutes that he stood there. He saw a bus in the distance and dug into his pocket for change.